July 27th, 2009, Placentia, California. 81-year-old Bob Harrod is discovered to be missing from his home, and he has left his car and his eyeglasses behind. 1 month earlier, Bob had gotten married to Fontel Heater, a former spouse whom he had not seen in 6 decades, and she was scheduled to move in with him 2 days after he disappeared. Since Bob has a substantial network, the situation causes a lot of friction between Fontel and Bob's daughters about the division of his assets, but even though investigators suspect that Bob may have been the victim of foul play, no trace of him is ever found. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and today we're going to be exploring an odd missing persons case involving an elderly man, the 2009 disappearance of Bob Harrod. Ever since the inception of this podcast, I've received a few requests to cover this case, as it was once featured on an episode of the popular true crime TV series Disappeared. The title of the Disappeared episode was Long Lost Love, because Bob Harrod was an 81-year-old widower who reconnected with a long-lost sweetheart named Fontel Heater, whom he had not seen for several decades, and they immediately decided to get married. The whole situation initially seemed like a very sweet, heartwarming love story, but things would take a much darker turn when Bob inexplicably vanished without a trace. Now, in many missing persons cases involving elderly individuals, one of the most logical explanations is that the victim became disoriented or had some sort of medical issue which caused them to wander off, but that doesn't seem to be the case here, as the authorities are inclined to believe that Bob was the victim of foul play. Even though Bob lived a modest lifestyle, he was actually worth millions, so his decision to get remarried caused some friction with his 3 daughters, who were not thrilled over the idea of Fontel getting her hands on their father's estate. Not only that, but prior to reconnecting with Fontel, Bob had developed a close relationship with a much younger woman whom he gave a lot of money to. Given the circumstances, it seems plausible that Bob's finances might have somehow played a role in his disappearance. Without a body or any physical evidence to work with at all, investigators have been unable to crack this case, though just over 3 years ago, 2 unnamed persons of interest were briefly arrested and detained before they were released without charge. One of the main reasons I've decided to do an episode about this story is not only because I haven't done a case from Disappeared in a while, but because Fontel Heater recently passed away without receiving any answers about what happened to Bob. There are a number of different possibilities here, which is why we're going to discuss them all on this episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, including stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the disappearance of Bob Harrod. Our story begins in 2009 in Placentia, California, a city located in Orange County near Anaheim, which had a population of around 50,000 at that time. Our central figure is 81-year-old Robert Merle Harrod, who goes by the name Bob, and has lived in Placentia for the past 7 years. A year and a half earlier, Bob's wife of 57 years, Georgia Harrod, passed away after a prolonged illness, but he has 3 married daughters named Roberta Brady, Paula Borcher, and Julie Michaels, as well as a grandson and three great-grandchildren. Shortly after losing his wife, Bob's pet dog also got sick and had to be euthanized, so he went through a major depression, which included a six-month period where he told his daughters that he wanted to be alone in order to gather his thoughts. However, Bob's outlook suddenly got a lot brighter when he was contacted by a 73-year-old long-lost love named Fontal Heater. Bob and Fontal had first met in 1949 while they were living in the small town of McFall, Missouri, and they would become engaged to be married the following year. But Bob had joined the Marine Reserves, and before their wedding could take place, he was ordered to report to Camp Pendleton in California. The couple agreed to stay in touch, but even though Fontal attempted to send letters to a residence where Bob was staying in California, they were always returned to her. At the time, the woman who owned this residence was attempting to hook Bob up with her niece, so in retrospect, Fontal believed that the woman may have intercepted the letters and sent them back before Bob could read them. For his part, Bob never attempted to contact Fontal on his own because he feared he might be shipped overseas to serve in the Korean War and did not want to hold her to a commitment if he did not survive. The couple completely lost touch and went their separate ways, as Bob soon met and married his wife Georgia, while Fontal went through two marriages of her own and had a total of three children. By 2006, Fontal was still living in Missouri, but was left a widow when her second husband passed away. 3 years later, Fontal felt a sudden desire to reconnect with Bob, and after her daughter managed to track him down on the internet and obtained his phone number, Fontal gave him a call, and they spoke for the first time in nearly 60 years. Bob told Fontal that he had always wanted to track her down as well, but he didn't know what her married name was. Shortly after they spoke on the phone, Bob mailed Fontal a letter which read, quote, May 3rd, 2009, the first day of the rest of my life. Dearest Fontal, your call was an answer to my prayer. I have been thinking of you every day lately and many times over the years and regretted leaving you under the conditions at the time. End quote. For the next several weeks, Bob and Fontal continued to speak on the phone virtually every day until he invited her to California to visit him. He proceeded to introduce Fontal to his three daughters, and they managed to rekindle the relationship. In fact, given their advanced ages, Bob did not feel the need to take things slowly, so he decided to propose to Fontal. Not only did Fontal say yes, but it turned out that she still had the original engagement ring Bob had given her back in 1950, though they would both buy each other some new wedding rings. On June the 29th, only 6 days after Fontal arrived in California, the couple decided to go to the county courthouse in Fullerton in order to obtain a marriage license, and they tied the knot that very same day. Of course, Fontal was planning to move in with Bob at his residence on Carnation Drive, but before she could do so, she needed to travel back to Missouri in order to settle her affairs, pack up her belongings, and move out of her former residence. By the evening of Monday, July the 27th, Fontal was only 2 days away from permanently relocating to Placentia, but she became concerned when she attempted to phone Bob multiple times and received no answer. At around midnight, Fontal received a call from Bob's daughter Julie, who informed her that Bob was missing. Julie and her husband, Jeff Michaels, lived in the town of Running Springs, and earlier that morning, Jeff had traveled to Bob's house in order to help him fix up the place and do some repairs in preparation for Fontal's arrival. Jeff claimed that sometime between 2 and 2:40 p.m., he stepped out to make a trip to Home Depot to pick up some supplies, and when he returned to the residence less than 1 hour later, he found Bob's housekeeper, Agnes, sitting outside on the front porch. Agnes had been Bob's housekeeper for over 10 years, and even though she usually worked for him on Tuesdays, Bob had arranged for her to come by the house one day earlier in order to clean the place. Agnes told Jeff that she arrived sometime between 3 and 3:30, but discovered that the front door was locked. When no one answered the door, Agnes proceeded to wait on the porch for the next 15 minutes until Jeff returned. Jeff was able to let himself and Agnes into the house through the back door, and even though Jeff initially thought that Bob might be upstairs taking a nap, he was nowhere to be found. Bob's 1997 Toyota Camry was still parked outside, and even though his wallet and keys were not at the residence, he had left his eyeglasses behind. Bob also did not own a cell phone, so no one could call him to see where he might be, and Agnes was surprised to discover that Bob's bed was unmade, which he said was very uncharacteristic of him whenever she frequented the residence. In spite of this, Jeff was not initially concerned, since he thought that Bob might have just stepped out to go for a walk or visit a neighbor, so he and Agnes continued their work, fixing up and cleaning the house. Jeff left at around 6 p.m., while Agnes left a short time later, but by that point, Bob had still not returned. Later that evening, Julie called the residence in order to check on Bob, but there was no answer, and when she called her two sisters, Roberta and Paula, they both said they had not heard from their father. This compelled Roberta to call the Placentia Police Department to ask them to perform a welfare check at Bob's residence, but when they arrived, the house was still empty. Julie then decided to call Fontelle in Missouri to see if she had heard from Bob, but since Fontelle also knew nothing about his current whereabouts, she contacted the Placentia PD in order to officially report Bob missing. According to the police, someone initially shared a theory with them that Bob might have disappeared voluntarily because he regretted having gotten remarried. But this idea didn't hold much water, as there would be no further activity on Bob's bank accounts or credit cards, or any evidence to suggest he was still alive. Bob's daughters claimed that he had recently been experiencing some memory problems, and would sometimes repeat himself while speaking, or forget how to do things, but Bob's doctor told police that he saw no signs of him having dementia or any serious medical conditions, and described him as the healthiest 81-year-old he had ever seen. On July the 29th, 2 days after Bob was last seen, Fontelle arrived in California and took residence in Bob's house, but he still did not resurface. Investigators would soon discover that even though Bob lived a modest lifestyle, he was actually quite wealthy. He had retired after a long career in contract administration and saved his money well. Bob also made some successful real estate investments and owned a number of properties, so his total net worth was around $5 million. According to Bob's daughters, they had no idea how wealthy he really was until after their mother passed away and they saw paperwork about the couple's finances. Fontelle also claimed that she was unaware of Bob's net worth when she married him, but handwritten notes were found in his house to indicate that he had been planning to include his new wife in his will and put her name on some of his assets, including his properties. In fact, this situation apparently caused some tension between Bob and his daughters. Back in 1995, Bob and Georgia had created a trust and made their children the beneficiaries, and after Georgia passed away, the family's attorney sent Julie, Roberta, and Paula a letter informing them that Bob was the trustee and he would report to them about how the trust was being managed on a regular basis. However, over the course of the next year, Bob did not keep his daughters informed about this, so they decided to draft a formal letter to him demanding that he comply with his responsibilities as trustee, which made him angry. On the day before he disappeared, Bob held a meeting in his house with Julie, Roberta, and Paula, where he was supposed to provide them with copies of their mother's bypass trust, which Bob was legally obligated to do because of the financial mechanism set up by the estate. But when his daughters arrived, Bob still did not have copies of the trust, which caused a heated argument. Bob's daughters maintained that the tension soon dissipated and that they peacefully resolved the situation and left on good terms. However, Fontelle claimed that when she spoke to Bob on the phone later that night, he still sounded quite shaken about the situation and told her they were not happy about his decision to add Fontelle's name to the house and his checking accounts. In fact, they also allegedly suggested that his marriage be annulled. Well, a few days after Bob went missing, Julie, Roberta, and Paula came to visit Fontelle at their father's house and informed her that she was not entitled to Bob's assets. Fontelle would claim they told her that a family attorney had advised them to kick her out of the house, but the three daughters have always insisted that this was misconstrued, and the attorney had simply advised them that they shouldn't have let Fontelle into the house in the first place. A short time later, Bob's daughters filed a petition of conservatorship in order to gain control of his assets, claiming that they needed to do this in order to maintain their father's home and pay his bills, as well as hire a private investigator and put up a $50,000 reward for information. Fontelle responded by contesting the conservatorship application as she changed the locks on Bob's house and continued to remain living there. When Bob's daughters filed a claim in probate court in order to get Fontelle removed from the residence, the judge ruled against them. While Fontelle never directly accused a specific individual, she expressed her belief that Bob was the victim of foul play and was killed inside his upstairs bathroom, either intentionally or accidentally. There was evidence to suggest that the bathroom had been damaged and repaired, though no direct evidence that foul play had taken place. Indeed, even though Jeff Michaels was the last known person to see Bob alive, time-stamped receipts and surveillance footage did back up his story that he visited Home Depot on the afternoon Bob went missing, and a forensic search of Jeff's vehicle turned up no evidence. Investigators have stated that neither Jeff nor any of Bob's daughters are considered suspects in his disappearance, but Jeff did state that while he was at Bob's house that day, he recalled seeing an SUV drive slowly down the street past the residence on multiple occasions. This SUV was believed to belong to a 44-year-old woman named Josie, who owned a barbershop that Bob and Georgia had frequented for years. Following Georgia's death, Josie accompanied Bob to a memorial service in which the Herod family was taking her ashes out to sea. In spite of their massive age difference, Josie started becoming closer to Bob. Now, Josie was married to another man at the time, so it's unclear if she and Bob became romantically involved, but he did reportedly lend her a total of $86,000 over the course of 9 months. Bob's daughters became concerned enough to contact the Department of Elder Social Services, who proceeded to interview Bob, and while they believed he was being abused financially by Josie, they also thought that Bob was of sound mind, and since he did not want to pursue the matter any further, there was nothing they could do. After getting married to Fontel, Bob asked Josie to repay him the money he had loaned her, though he went missing before this could happen. In spite of this, Josie reportedly had an alibi on the day Bob vanished, and both her and her husband were cleared of any connection to the case. Since California law states that a person can be declared legally dead after they are missing for 5 years, Bob's family went through the process of doing so in 2014. Since this allowed them to inherit Bob's property, they were able to arrange for Fontel to be evicted from his house, and she eventually moved back to Missouri. Authorities have classified Bob's death as a potential homicide, but they have expressed their belief that he was not harmed by a stranger. There would be an interesting development in the case in April of 2019, when the Placentia PD announced that they had arrested and detained two local residents in connection with the case, whom they classified as persons of interest and quote-unquote associates of Bob. The two individuals' names were never disclosed publicly, and both of them were soon released, pending further investigation. Investigators have not shared any details about why these people were arrested, but there have not been any developments in the case since then. Sadly, Fontel Heater, who continued going by her married name Fontel Herod until the very end, passed away on August the 21st, 2022, at the age of 86. So after 13 years, Bob Herod continues to remain a missing person. So I guess you could say the trail went cold. So I can honestly say that I've never really seen a missing persons case like this one, where it transitions from a heartwarming love story to a tragic mystery within the span of 1 month. Here were two elderly individuals who had both gone into depression after losing their respective spouses, but wound up reconnecting with a long-lost love and finally went through a wedding which was supposed to take place nearly 60 years earlier. What's interesting is that Bob and Fontel's romance was such a feel-good human interest story that it wound up getting media attention before Bob went missing. The local newspaper, the Orange County Register, published an article about their recent marriage on July the 7th, 2009, and Bob was even interviewed by a local TV news crew. In many missing persons cases, you only get to know the victims from their photographs, and it's very rare that you're able to see video footage of them speaking, which only makes them more human. Watching Bob's TV interview is both poignant and eerie, because you can tell that he's the happiest he has been in quite some time, but you also know that he's going to vanish without a trace 3 weeks later. And of course, what makes the whole thing even sadder is the possibility that Bob could have gone missing because of his marriage, as it's apparent that allowing his new bride to have a piece of his $5 million fortune was causing some friction within his family. Now, you'll find no shortage of online discussion about this case, as there are no less than 20 threads devoted to Bob's disappearance on the WebSleuth forum. And quite frankly, a lot of the discussion about Bob's three daughters, Julie, Paula, and Roberta, is not too flattering, as there are definitely a number of people who suspect that one or more, if not all of them, might have played some sort of role in Bob's disappearance. What further complicates this whole situation is that Bob's son-in-law was the last known person to see him alive, and Bob had also developed a close relationship with a much younger woman whom he had lent large sums of money to. Hell, you'll even find suspicions directed towards Fontelle herself and the possibility that she married Bob simply to get her hands on his fortune. I just mentioned that 3.5 years ago, two persons of interest who were described as being quote-unquote associates of Bob were briefly arrested and detained in relation to the case before they were released without charge. Their identities have never been released publicly, but since there are so many different people associated with this story, we can only guess who these two individuals might be. Obviously, Bob's fortune seems to be the most logical motive for his disappearance, but you have to remember that he is technically still only a missing person, not a homicide victim. California law requires that a person be missing for at least 5 years before they can be legally declared dead, so theoretically, if someone killed Bob for his inheritance, it would have been in their best interest to ensure his body was found, since they could not benefit financially until at least 2014. If you search on YouTube, you'll be able to find clips of some local news segments which were filmed in the days following Bob's disappearance, and one of them features footage of Fontelle arriving in Placentia and being consoled by Julie, Paula, and Roberta. It's quite surreal to watch that, knowing that the two sides would soon wind up on very bad terms with each other and become embroiled in a heated feud over Bob's estate. And what adds an extra element of frustration to the situation is that we have conflicting stories from both Fontelle and the three daughters about key events which took place around the time period Bob vanished. I suppose I should begin my analysis by talking about Fontelle, as the fact that she recently passed away without receiving any answers about what happened adds an extra element of tragedy to this whole story. In many cases, you might feel suspicious about a woman suddenly re-entering a wealthy man's life after not seeing him for decades and marrying him a short time later before he went missing. Bob's daughters have given off the impression that they believe she was some sort of gold digger who was only after him for his money. However, when you look at the big picture, Fontelle definitely seems to be the least likely suspect. I mean, Fontelle was in a completely different state at the time Bob went missing, so she couldn't have any direct involvement, and while you could explore the possibility of a murder for hire, that scenario really doesn't make any sense. For starters, it sounds like the quick decision to get married was Bob's idea, as he was an 81-year-old widower who had to adjust to the pain of being alone for the first time in 6 decades. So when a former flame re-entered his life, and he fell head over heels in love again, Bob did not see the purpose of taking things slowly with her, because who knows how much time he had left. Fontelle always maintained that she had no idea Bob was wealthy until after he went missing, and I can believe that, as he lived a modest, middle-class lifestyle. You certainly don't expect an individual who's driving a 1997 Toyota Camry in 2009 to have a net worth of $5 million. Hell, Bob's own daughters even admitted that they had no idea what he was really worth until after their mother passed away the previous year. While during your interview on the Disappeared episode, Fontelle brought up a point which should dispel any notion about her being involved in Bob's disappearance. If all she cared about was his money, she would have ensured that all the necessary paperwork making her a beneficiary to his estate would have been signed before she left California to return home to Missouri. Some people might find it odd that Fontelle decided to move into Bob's house after he vanished and remained there for the next several years, but she really didn't have much of a choice. Remember, she had spent the previous month moving out of her residence in Missouri in order to live with Bob, so where else was she going to go? I can't imagine she wanted to go through the ordeal of finding another place to live when she was dealing with the trauma of her husband going missing. And putting aside the potential motive of Fontelle orchestrating a murder for hire, the logistics just seem impossible. If you look at the timeline, Bob seemingly went missing during a narrow period of around 20 to 30 minutes between when his son-in-law left his house to go to Home Depot and his housekeeper arrived at the residence. What amazing luck that this mythical hitman managed to have in order to remove Bob from his home within this very brief window of time when no one else was there. Even though it appears that Bob's daughters have attempted to paint an unflattering picture of Fontelle, she does come across as a nice woman during interviews. Just imagine how difficult it must have been for her to lose her husband, rekindle her romance with Bob, get remarried, and then lose him within 1 3-year period. I mentioned earlier that when Fontel first arrived in Placentia following Bob's disappearance, the news cameras caught footage of his daughters hugging and consoling her, but things obviously changed in a big hurry, since Julie, Roberta, and Paula met with Fontel a few days later to let her know that she was not entitled to their father's assets. And we have these differing accounts about whether or not they told Fontel that a family attorney had advised them to kick her out of the house. Well, at this point, Bob had only been missing for a short amount of time, so it does seem a bit callous to be focusing so much on the handling of his estate when there hasn't been any confirmation yet about him being dead or alive. So I can see why it might look incredibly suspicious that Bob just happened to go missing the very day after he had a meeting with his three daughters to discuss his family's finances. We have two differing versions of what happened, as Julie, Paula, and Roberta maintain that even though they did have a heated argument, they were able to peacefully resolve the situation and left their father's house on good terms. But Fontel claims that when she spoke to Bob on the phone later that evening, he still seemed pretty upset. Fontel's version of the story is that they were not happy that Bob was planning to add her name to his house and checking accounts, and even wanted their marriage to be annulled. Bob's daughters have always downplayed this, as they say that the main source of their friction was their father's lack of transparency about their late mother's bypass trust, an issue which had nothing to do with Fontel and had been a recurring problem before they even got married. Since Bob himself is no longer around to clarify the situation, we'll probably never know what the real truth is, but since his daughters filed a petition of conservatorship only a week and a half after he went missing, and later went to probate court to try and get Fontel removed from the residence, they were obviously quite concerned about keeping control of his finances. One aspect of this case I've always found concerning is that Bob's daughter shared details about him with the media that were contradicted by other sources. For instance, they said that Bob had been experiencing memory issues and potential signs of dementia, but Bob's doctor told police that he was quite healthy for his age. They also claimed that Bob had bad knees and couldn't walk more than 2 blocks, but Bob's neighbors said that he often liked to take mile-long walks up the street and back virtually every day. Bob's daughters also described him as being a homebody who did not like to go out much and did everything he could to avoid driving on the freeway. However, investigators learned that about a month or so prior to his disappearance, Bob took Fontel to visit friends of his who lived on Balboa Island, a harborside community in Newport Beach, and it would have been impossible for him to drive there without using the freeway. So why are we getting all these contradictory stories about Bob's physical and mental health? Were his daughters trying to plant some seeds in order to give off the impression that he became disoriented and wandered off? I mean, given Bob's advanced age, I suppose we can't completely discount that possibility, but there have been no reported sightings of him since he went missing. Bob's disappearance also immediately received a lot of attention from the local media, and he was a very distinct-looking guy, so unless he wandered off into a remote area and died of exposure or something, I think there's a good chance he would have been found relatively quickly. It's also worth reiterating that police claim that someone initially told them that Bob might have run away on his own because he regretted his marriage to Fontel, but they never publicly revealed the identity of the person who shared this theory. So you have to wonder if it might have been someone who had their own ulterior motives for attempting to push forward a false narrative. But before we explore this issue any further, we should discuss the other person who's been pushed forward as a potential suspect, and that's Bob's barber, Josie. On the surface, there would definitely appear to be good reason to be suspicious of her, as she really does come across as the type of gold digger which Bob's daughters accused Fontel of being. It is quite troubling that a woman who was nearly half Bob's age would try putting her hooks into him almost immediately after his wife's death. As Bob's family was quite surprised to see Josie accompany him to a ceremony to spread Georgia's ashes. Since Georgia went through a prolonged illness before she passed away, you almost get the impression that Josie may have planned this all along and was going to do everything in her power to exploit a lonely, grieving widower. Now, since Josie had a husband of her own, it's never been conclusively established if she took things any further and had an affair with Bob, but she did convince him to loan her a lot of money. According to Bob's daughters, it was very out of character for him to be that frivolous about giving money to other people outside the family, and even when he did loan money to his family members, he would always make sure the transaction was documented on paper and charge an interest rate to ensure the loan would be paid back. But it sounds like Bob gave Josie a lot of money and gifts without going through this process. Investigators have stated that they do not believe Josie had much of a motive to harm Bob, since she essentially would have been getting rid of her meal ticket. But let's not forget that since Bob got remarried, it seems like he was expecting Josie to pay back the money he loaned her. Now that he had Fontel, Bob no longer needed Josie's attention as much as he did before, so this could have given Josie a motive to harm Bob in order to avoid repaying the loan. All that being said, it sounds like Josie had an alibi for the day Bob went missing, and while no specific details about this have been released, it appears that investigators have pretty much ruled out Josie and her husband as suspects. It is interesting how one of the reasons Josie popped up on the radar as a potential suspect is because Bob's son-in-law, Jeff Michaels, reported seeing what he believed was a suspicious-looking SUV driving past Bob's house multiple times on the day he went missing. Josie did drive a vehicle just like that, but always maintained that she was nowhere near the residence on that particular date. I mean, it's possible that Jeff is telling the truth, and he just saw a completely different SUV, which has no relevance to this case. However, if you believe Jeff is complicit in what happened, perhaps he fabricated the story in order to subtly direct suspicion towards Josie. Now, one thing I'd be curious to know is what kind of relationship Bob had with his daughters prior to the death of his wife. They've always claimed that the loss devastated him so much that he went into a deep depression and lost a lot of weight because he didn't even feel like eating anymore. Things eventually reached the point where Bob told his daughters that he wanted to be alone and have no contact with them for 6 months because he needed time for himself, but you have to wonder if there might be more to that story. Given how quickly Bob's daughters worked to gain control of his finances after he went missing, perhaps a similar situation happened following the loss of their mother, as they immediately wanted to sort out the issue with the family trust, and even went so far as to draft a formal letter to him about it, but Bob may have just been too bereaved to deal with it. Let's also not forget that they had called the Department of Elder Social Services to interview Bob over their concern that he was being exploited by Josie. I can't imagine that Bob was too happy about the situation, so it would not surprise me if this played a role in his decision to cut himself off from his daughters for 6 months. I mean, if the relationship between Bob and his children was good throughout the majority of his life, then I cannot imagine things escalating to the point where they would do something as cruel and sadistic as murdering their own father for money. Yes, there are plenty of other documented cases of people murdering their own parents for financial gain, but here, we have three daughters who would have stood to benefit financially if Bob was out of the picture, and I'd hate to think that all three of them were capable of something like this. So could this be a case where just one, or perhaps two of Bob's daughters were complicit in what happened, but the others are completely innocent? And we also have to take into account that the husband of one of these daughters, Julie, was the last known person to see Bob alive. Even though Paula and Roberta agreed to be interviewed during the Disappeared episode, Julie was not, though you can find clips on YouTube of Julie speaking to the media in the days after her father went missing. As far as I can tell, Jeff Michaels has never done any interviews or spoken to the media at all. But let's examine the series of events which took place on the day Bob disappeared. The story goes that Bob invited Jeff over to his residence on July the 27th in order to help him with repairs and preparing the house for Fontel's arrival 2 days later. According to Jeff, he left in order to pick up some supplies from Home Depot, but by the time he returned, the house's front door was locked, Bob was gone, and his housekeeper Agnes was sitting on the front porch. I should mention that there is conflicting information from different sources about what time of the day these events actually took place. The Disappeared episode says that Agnes arrived at the residence at noon, but most of the sources state that Jeff left the residence sometime between 2:30 and 2:40 p.m., and Agnes arrived sometime after 3 p.m., so I am inclined to believe that this timeline is the correct one. Investigators were able to verify Jeff's story and confirm that he did visit Home Depot during this time period, but of course, that doesn't necessarily exclude him from being involved in Bob's disappearance, since we have a large window of time from earlier that day in which we technically have no independent eyewitnesses besides Jeff to confirm Bob's whereabouts. Agnes agreed to be interviewed on the Disappeared episode, and she said that Jeff seemed genuinely surprised to find her on the front porch, and she found it unusual that Bob did not tell Jeff she was coming. Agnes usually cleaned the house on Tuesdays, but Bob had arranged for her to stop by and clean the place that afternoon, which was a Monday. So I can understand why Jeff would be thrown off by Agnes's presence, and this would be especially troubling for him if he had played some sort of role in Bob's disappearance. Agnes also recounts that after they entered the residence, Jeff told her that he was going to check upstairs to see if Bob was napping, and even though this only should have taken a few seconds, Agnes said that Jeff was up there for a few minutes before he came back down and confirmed that Bob wasn't there. So, hypothetically, if there was some evidence that a crime had been committed upstairs, Jeff could have been using this opportunity to cover it up before Agnes saw it. Fontel would later say that when she moved into the house, she saw evidence to suggest that the upstairs bathroom had been damaged and repaired. Fontel had stayed in the house when she visited Bob 1 month earlier, and I'm guessing she didn't see any signs of this damage the first time around. So while Jeff may have technically been telling the truth about visiting the Home Depot to pick up supplies for repairs, he was actually doing so for more nefarious reasons. But in Jeff's defense, even though he remained at the house for another 3 hours after he returned, he did leave before Agnes did. If he was in the midst of covering up a crime, you would think that Jeff might be inclined to hang around a bit longer and not leave Agnes alone. Agnes also made sure to point out how unusual she found it when she noticed that Bob's bed was unmade, as she had been cleaning his house for over 10 years at that point, and it was apparently very out of character for him to not make his bed before the middle of the afternoon. So even though Jeff maintained that everything was fine when he left the house at 2:40, could this unmade bed indicate that something happened to Bob the previous evening or early that morning? Well, a number of phone calls were made from Bob's residence that day, and investigators seized the records, but they have not released any specific information about them. Details are a bit fuzzy, but multiple sources have stated that Bob's call to Agnes asking her to come by the house to clean it took place earlier that same morning. If true, then this would help establish a window of how much time there was between when Bob was last confirmed to be alive and when he was discovered to be missing just after 3 p.m. Another point in Jeff's favor is that a search of his vehicle turned up no forensic evidence to suggest that a body had ever been in there, but for all we know, someone else could have used their own vehicle to move Bob's body while Jeff remained at the house, cleaning up or making repairs to the murder scene. Investigators did confirm that they performed a search of the house following Bob's disappearance, but have never released any details of what they may or may not have found. Look, I'm not saying that Jeff is guilty of anything, as he may very well be telling the complete truth, but if he is, it's hard to imagine what could have happened to make Bob disappear within that half-hour window between when Jeff went to the Home Depot and Agnes showed up, particularly since this was in broad daylight, and none of the neighbors reported seeing or hearing anything unusual. The fact that the front door was locked when Agnes arrived does seem to point away from the idea of a forcible abduction. If something did take place, it may have involved Bob leaving the residence in the vehicle with someone he knew and trusted, which may not have attracted any attention. Regardless of whether Bob was abducted or someone killed him at the house and staged his disappearance, it's very odd that his wallet and keys would be missing, but his eyeglasses were left behind, as every single photo I've seen of Bob shows him wearing glasses, so I have to assume he really needed them. The problem is that there's virtually no physical evidence to work with in this case, and while I get the impression that investigators might have their own ideas about what happened to Bob, they likely don't have any proof to back it up. Now, the one point which I previously brought up to dispute the idea that Bob was murdered for his inheritance is that without a body, he was technically just a missing person, so the responsible parties would have to wait at least 5 years until they received any money. However, it's possible that this wasn't a premeditated murder, but rather a situation where Bob got into a heated dispute with someone which turned violent and led to him accidentally being killed. Remember, even though Bob's daughters have always maintained that they had reconciled their differences during their final meeting with him the day before he went missing, Fontel claimed that Bob still seemed to be perturbed about the situation when she spoke to him on the phone that night. So if these issues were not resolved, and someone paid Bob a visit the following day, I could see things escalating out of control, and the responsible party disposing of Bob's body in a panic. After all, Since Fontel was scheduled to arrive in 2 days, this would have been one of the last chances this family had to resolve the situation while Bob was alone in his house. But I must reiterate that investigators have never openly indicated that they consider anyone from Bob's family to be a suspect, as it seems like most of the suspicion against them have come from online sleuths who are not privy to the full facts. At one point, Roberta stated that she was reluctant to talk to the media because she felt she had been unfairly represented in the past, so perhaps some unjust suspicion has been placed on Bob's family. While we know Jeff's whereabouts on the afternoon Bob went missing, it's never been publicly released what kind of alibis the three daughters might have had that day. I'm not sure where Paula and Roberta were living at that time, but Julie and Jeff lived in Running Springs, which is located over 60 miles away from Placentia. And while I might be reading too much into this, the reporting about the two persons of interest who were detained in 2019 described them as quote-unquote local residents, which implies that they lived in Placentia. Again, we don't know the identities of these two people, or if it might be some sort of combination of Jeff, Julie, Paula, or Roberta. Hell, even though they were seemingly cleared as suspects, there has been speculation that these two individuals might have been Josie and her husband. It's certainly possible that Bob was murdered over his inheritance, but for all we know, perhaps this angle is completely unrelated to the situation, and there's just a piece of the puzzle we're missing here. Cases in which elderly people are victimized are always tragic, but it's incredibly heartbreaking when it involves someone like Bob, who suffered a terrible tragedy, spent a year mired in depression, but then an unexpected event allowed him to regain his happiness, and he was prepared to spend the last chapter of his life with someone he loved before it was all taken away from him. It's possible that law enforcement has a pretty good idea what happened and just need that one final piece of evidence to close this case, but Bob definitely deserves justice. So if you happen to have any information about the unsolved disappearance of Bob Harrod, please contact the Placentia Police Department at 714-993-8164. That's 714-993-8164. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. This past month, I released a special Halloween-themed bonus episode about the infamous Falcon Lake incident, where a man named Stephen Michalak supposedly came across a UFO inside a provincial park in Manitoba, which caused him to receive some unexplained burns on his body. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, cover yet another case from Unsolved Mysteries, the 1991 murder of Soo-ya Kim. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Rebecca W., Kate C., and Sean D. Thank you all so much for your support. Anyway, I'm also pleased to announce that I have officially signed to make my return to CrimeCon UK next year, as the world's number one true crime event is returning to London on June the 10th and 11th of 2023. It's the ultimate true crime weekend partnered by CBS Reality, the expert-led true crime channel. It's your opportunity to get inside the minds of serial killers and psychopaths, learn from leading criminologists, hear from families and survivors, and immerse yourself in forensic evidence and delve deeper into unsolved crimes. And of course, it's also a great opportunity to meet your favorite true crime podcasters and creators, including yours truly, in the events content creators area. Tickets are on sale now, so in order to join us and get a special 10% discount, please visit crimecon.co.uk and use the special promo code COLE23. That's crimecon.co.uk, and the promo code is COLE23. Hope to see you there. I just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online Forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourselves a good week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm sorry.